Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or your church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at OutdoorNativityStore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities, OutdoorNativityStore.com. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
A truly tragic anniversary is upon us. The 40th anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre. What do you call it when 918 people die either by their own hand, poisoning themselves, or at the hands of others, in the cases of parents poisoning their children, all at the command and the behest of a cult leader? Jim Jones was his name, thus Jonestown. And they had followed him there to Guyana, to live there, to give up their property, to live communally. And in the end, because of the paranoia of their leader, both their leader and 918 of them ended up dead. Now, I remember when this occurred. It was a worldwide global news story before we had global news networks. The images were horrifying. Hundreds of people lying in the grass of the Jonestown compound, dead. So why is it that I don't know what Jim Jones actually believed? And why is it that I could not tell you what that suicide cult, what ended up being a suicide cult, actually believed? Maybe the reporting on the religion angle wasn't as good as it could have been, or maybe even today as good as it could be. Joining us to talk about the 40th anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre and the importance of religion reporting, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So you and I are slightly different in ages. I was 14 when this occurred, but I do distinctly remember the incident. I do distinctly remember the impact that it had and the kind of eye-opener it was for many people about what had been going on in California and then later in Guyana. What were you doing, and why do you say that Jonestown, the story, in many ways was the genesis of Get Religion?
Well, we'll come back to your age and your impressions of the story at that time. I watched the Jonestown story evolve at a crucial time in my professional career. I had just graduated from Baylor, and I already knew at that time that I wanted to be a professional journalist who covered religion in the mainstream media. The question was, how do you get there? My wife and I had moved to Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, for her to go to the world-class library school there, and I was going to work at the local paper, which was definitely not large enough to have a religion beat person. I ended up as a copy editor and part-time rock and roll columnist, but that's another story. Suffice it to say, what I knew I had to do was start making connections with professionals on the religion beat. So Jonestown broke as a story right during the years when I was trying to build up contacts with kind of my heroes on the religion beat. That would include people like Lewis Moore at that point of the Houston Chronicle, the late Helen Parmley of Dallas, the late and world-famous George Cornell of the Associated Press. I had my first contacts with people like Richard Osling of Time, now of Get Religion, and Russell Chandler. And I was talking to these people about the issue that would, of course, determine my future and a lot of my research in graduate school at the University of Illinois 3 or 4 years later. And that was the question, why don't newspapers cover religion? Why don't the editors get it? Does that sound like a rather familiar question to you?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So this is like 1978, Jonestown. What I remember about Jonestown was how the images and the media impressions I was getting of who the Reverend Jim Jones was contrasted with what I was reading elsewhere. This is pre-internet, of course. You don't have nearly the range of information. But one thing jumped out at me and jumped out in my conversations with other religion writers. Jim Jones was being presented as this messianic, crazy cult leader. And then, like way down in the story, it would mention that he was a minister in the Disciples of Christ. The Christian Church, the Disciples of Christ. Now, when you hear the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, what do you think? What impression do you have?
Well, I think about a probably once rather pietistic church body that has traveled the path of kind of mainline Protestantism into pursuing cultural relevance, kind of vanilla Christianity, not to be too derogatory there. Certainly not a cult factory or a cult leader factory.
Yeah, well, at that time, it's safe to say that the most famous disciple in America was Ronald Reagan, a devoted member of that middle American, Midwestern denomination. And you're absolutely right that in the late 60s, along with a lot of other mainline Protestant churches, the disciples kind of began in certain parts of the country, way more than others. I know disciples today would want me to stress that. Began this kind of pursuit of what would become liberal mainline Protestantism, the Vietnam War, the 60s sexual revolution, and all that is going on. Suffice it to say, while the images portrayed Jim Jones as this kind of messianic, charismatic, and yes, the word fundamentalist was definitely used, if you actually looked at his background, a few journalists picked up on the fact that he was praising socialism, which is usually not something that accompanies biblical fundamentalism in an American context. But he was saying a whole lot of other things, and his connections were not evangelical / fundamentalist, to say the least. His roots in San Francisco. Now, the main thing that, when I say that this was the case that led to Get Religion, I'm stretching this for the sake of an image, but this was definitely one of the cases that made me look at the field of religion writing and ask a very basic question. When this story began to break, and then when it exploded onto the covers of every magazine and at the start of every evening newscast, why weren't there any religion reporters involved in covering it? At that time, there were quite a few highly qualified religion reporters in the American press, doing a few calls around and talking to people like Lewis Moore and George Cornell and others. I couldn't find any case where a religion beat specialist was assigned to Jonestown. And I don't remember who said it, but I distinctly remember someone saying, well, obviously, editors think this story is too big to be a religion story. Thus, it shouldn't be covered by religion reporters. It should be covered by, you know, real reporters, superstar reporters, big names should cover this story. Like, I don't remember if Dan Rather went down there, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit if Dan Rather headed to Jonestown along with the other superstars of that age. And how did that affect the coverage? The simple fact of the matter is the American people learned almost nothing about Jim Jones and his background, and especially the degree to which he had strong ties to the emerging progressive establishment of San Francisco, to the mayor there, and to, you know, Harvey Milk, kind of one of the pioneers of the entire gay rights culture. And I'm not saying that those men endorsed what Jim Jones became. What I'm saying is that he was a twisted, flawed branch off that trunk of culture. When, if you watch the coverage, you would have thought he was some sort of charismatic evangelical Protestant or whatever. It is true that in his background, and he had a very complex religious background, he was very impressed with the kind of charismatic, flame-throwing preaching of the Assemblies of God or whatever. But if you looked at his theological beliefs and the things he was saying, he was a man of the left. And I am not sure that's the impression that America got. And that was a crucial period of time right before we rolled into the era of the rise of the religious right, the rise of the superstar, TV, evangelists, and a lot of other things. So that's what I meant when I said, get religion's roots, go back to Jonestown. What I meant is that's where I began to hear the questions that shaped my research into religion writing in the mainstream press, and those questions have been with me ever since.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the 40th anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre and the importance of religion reporters. When we come back, why is it that at the time we didn't hear much about what Jim Jones and his followers actually believed?
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Well, a human nature is what makes you human and not a dog or a fish or a turtle. Your human nature is what sets your ultimate capacities and determines the kind of thing you are. You don't get a human nature in degrees. You either have it or you don't. There's no degree involved.
Scott Klusendorf speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Well, people today are quite willing to concede that you have a human nature. They're willing to concede I do, but they don't want to concede that embryo is. And here's the question you put to them when they challenge you. How do two human parents create offspring that isn't human, but later become so?
You can listen to Scott Klusendorf's presentation, Making the Case for Life, and all the speakers at our 2018 Making the Case conferences on an audio DVD or flash drive. We'll send it to you for a $300 year-end tax-deductible donation. Look for the link at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday, November the 20th, we're talking about the 40th anniversary of the Jonestown Massacre and the importance of religion reporting. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, I'm looking back on this, and again, it's through the filter of 40 years, and it's a 14-year-old's memory of the thing. But I can't recall having anything explained in all the news coverage that there was, and at the time it was massive, about what Jim Jones and his followers actually believed.
Yeah, and I want to stress that the disciples were not slapping this man on the back and congratulating him for his work. We had several years of investigations going on behind the scenes. And as it became more and more obvious how deranged this man was, you began to see efforts to kind of distance from Jones. But I think it was interesting. The New York Times actually had, soon after the massacre, had a pretty interesting story about his relationship with the Disciples of Christ. But that was like on page 16 back in the department store ads. You know, what you were seeing on the television screen in the most lurid possible detail. I'm sure you were at the stage where the coverage must have had quite an emotional impact on you.
Oh, it was the biggest cult story that I could recall from that time.
Yeah. It was a vision of hell on earth. I just think that's, and 900 people gunning down a U.S. congressman who was sent down there as a part of a team to investigate what was happening. It would be hard to imagine an event more spectacularly deranged than this one. All those children, all of those parents. And then we quickly were hearing the voice of this wild preacher. And a lot of terms got thrown around for him. Liberal mainline Protestant was not one of them. But I want to focus again on the fact that the disciples were worried. And let me put a plug in for the fact that what I mentioned earlier, the disciples to this day are very different in the Sun Belt than they are in, let's say, the upper Midwest, you know, and along the two coasts. The disciples are a very congregational flock of people, and linked, of course, both to the non-instrumental churches of Christ and the independent Christian churches, a group that I was connected with in the sense that I was a faculty member at Milligan College, which is a church in this more evangelical expression of that Campbellite tradition. So the disciples of Texas are not the disciples of, I don't know, San Francisco, to name the, you know, the base of operations for Jim Jones before he headed to South America. There was a story there to cover, and it would be interesting to know what religion reporters were attempting to cover the investigations behind the scenes. The big idea for listeners to understand is that when the story busted into the biggest story in the world, religious facts, doctrinal facts even, were not all that important. What mattered were crazy facts. And a part of the craziness was this man's image as this flamboyant, Elmer Gantry-style cult preacher. Like I said, that tended to be something that this language was used more often to describe conservative Christians than liberal. The facts didn't matter that much at that point.
Do you think two things contributed to either ignoring or misinterpreting the religion angle in the Jonestown story at the time? One was the fact of, and you mentioned this earlier, images. Eventually, there were images of bodies kind of strewn about this campground, of mothers and children and whole families and mm-hmm. things like that. So the images were so grotesque and startling and shocking that you lose interest in every other aspect of the story. But also, and you've mentioned this, the style that Jim Jones adopted as a cult leader was heavily influenced out of, you know, kind of the what I think the uninitiated, the person who's religiously neutral, so to speak, in the newsroom might just say, well, he sounds like a Southern preacher getting all wound up.
And he's claiming to hear from God. What kinds of ministers claim to hear from God? He must be some sort of Pentecostal guy. You can still, even today, we're with this anniversary, we're having some media attention devoted to it, including a people of the level of Leonardo DiCaprio getting involved in producing a Sundance TV series of documentaries. And the name of this series kind of captures, you know, what I still think about this whole story. The name of this film, or this series of films, is The Ballad of Jim Jones, From Socialist Cult Messiah to Mass Killing Monster. Now, socialist cult is simply, I mean, that's an interesting pair of words, and the sort of thing that maybe looking back over it through time, we know a whole lot more about who he was and what he was saying now. But there's still, maybe it's not even the ballad of the Reverend Jim Jones or the ballad of Pastor Jim Jones. Or, you know, I mean, I could think of ways. It's still, in some ways, too big a story to say that the religious content of the story and the religious content of this man's work may have had something to do with the event taking place. When powerful men and women claim prophetic powers. This is always a danger sign. Of course, with my background going to Baylor and spending 6 years in Waco, immediately I think of the recent attention given to the Branch Davidians and to the David Koresh story. There is so much more that we know now about what Koresh was actually saying than what was reported at the time. And a lot of people, and not just religion writers like me, a lot of people have said, oh, if only the FBI had recognized the religious facts on the ground of what he was saying, that entire massacre could have been averted. It didn't have to happen. The question now, I guess we could ask is, if anyone had really taken seriously the apocalyptic images being thrown around by the Reverend Jim Jones, could that catastrophe have been averted? I don't know. I just know that religion is awfully important. And when you get people making life and death covenants, it really matters what they think about God and how they think God reveals himself and what kinds of actions that God might ask of them. And, yeah, whether those words of God or interpretations of God are coming through the mouths of someone like Jim Jones. I guess the bottom line, what I heard religion writers saying was, how could anybody look at this story and not see that the religious content was an important part of the story? What kind of journalistic blindness would lead to that decision? And that is still the same question that we end up asking to varying degrees, maybe not as hellish as this one, but we end up asking that question an awful lot at Get Religion. Sadly, it remains a relevant question today.
Can we understand, not only then, but also now 40 years afterwards, why almost 920 people died in Jonestown? Can we understand that mass suicide / murder? Can we understand it without fully exploring the religion angle of the Jonestown massacre?
Well, I think there's several things. The history of people who use apocalyptic language to describe their work is not very good. I think it's also important to recognize that when ministers and when other people start saying that God wants them to create some sort of perfect community, some sort of prophetic body of people that are going to show the world what perfect Christianity looks like, the track record of that kind of effort is not very good. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So what is that drive all about? What does it mean, you know, when you're trying to create the perfect city, the perfect society, the perfect church, the perfect movement? And then if the world then opposes you and wants to strike down your attempt at creating that kind of a perfect culture, at that point, the leader can turn to things like, okay, then join me in an act of, his phrase, revolutionary suicide. We will take a last stand rather than surrender to them and give up this wonderful community that we've created and that they now want to destroy. And the phrase, of course, that has come out of that, the people drank the Kool-Aid, which, by the way, if many listeners don't know the details, the Kool-Aid was laced with cyanide. It would be hard to imagine a more horrific and painful death than mass suicide, including little children drinking cyanide. That is a vision out of the worst paintings of hell.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you next week.
Glad to do so.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we will look forward to a day of Thanksgiving with Pastor David Peterson, and we'll continue our Lutheran Catechesis series talking to Pastor Peter Bender about Christ fulfilling the law. The Issues Etc. book of the month for November is called Clearly Christian, Following Jesus in This Age of Confusion. Check it out at issuesetc.org. Clearly Christian by Pastor Trevor Sutton. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoda, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoda, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoda.com.